Morning cold, coffee steams.
From archive to your ears, this is Daily Tech Feed from the Labs. Your comprehensive, encyclopedic compendium of all things research. Following the latest trends on archive.org, that's ARXIV.org. This is Frontier Science. I'm Fry.
And I'm Bob. Great to be here, Fry.
From the labs.
Fresh grass, wild schemes, new worlds in a PDF beam. Daily Tech Feed from the labs.
Bob, I want to tell you about a robot that learned to transfer a cube between chopsticks.
That's not a sentence I expected this morning.
No. Hear me out, because this is the setup for something that I think is genuinely one of the most instructive stories in modern AI research. Not the most dramatic, not the one with the biggest model or the most compute. In fact, the whole story is kind of the opposite of that. There's a PhD student at Stanford, April 2023. He doesn't have a budget. He has two off-the-shelf robot arms bolted to a table. They cost about $10,000 each, and with those arms and 50 hours of human demonstrations, 50. He achieves 80 to 90% success on tasks that previously required high-end robotic platforms with careful sensor calibration and years of engineering.
That's the Aloha paper.
That's the Aloha paper, and the reason it matters has almost nothing to do with the robot arms and almost everything to do with what cheapness unlocks.
Before we get to that, bimanual, two arms, why does that matter? Why not just use one arm really well?
Because the world is built for two hands. Think about the things you do every day that require two hands. Not because you couldn't theoretically do them with one, but because doing them with one would be impossibly slow or physically impossible with human-level tool geometry. Tying a shoelace, threading a needle, folding a piece of paper in half while keeping it aligned, opening a jar, screwing a battery cap, inserting something into a slot while holding the receptacle steady.
One hand holds, one hand acts.
That's the fundamental pattern. One hand as fixture, one hand as manipulator. And it's not just a convenience, it's the architecture of dexterous manipulation. The mechanical reason humans can do delicate tasks with their hands is that we have two of them and they communicate through the objects we're holding. The force feedback through a jar lid tells your unscrewing hand how tight to grip. The tension in a shoelace tells both hands how to adjust. In robotics, a single arm operating in free space has no partner. It has to do everything with one tool against a fixed or gravity-constrained world.
Which is why single-arm robots mostly just pick and place.
Pick, place, and push. The canonical single-arm manipulation task is grasp this object and put it somewhere else. That's a real use case in industrial settings. But it's not what hands are for. Hands are for the messy, contact-rich, dexterous things. And those require two of them working together. That's why Aloha is not just two arms instead of one. It's a completely different regime of tasks. Chapter 1. The data problem that nobody was talking about. Let me give you the context for why robotics was stuck. If you were building a robot learning system before Aloha, you faced what I'd call the data trap. The robots capable of performing fine manipulation tasks. The ones with the precision and repeatability to actually do interesting things. Were expensive. A Boston Dynamics arm, an ABB industrial manipulator, a Da Vinci surgical robot. These things cost hundreds of thousands of dollars, sometimes millions. And when your hardware costs that much, two things happen. First, you have very few of them. Second, every hour you run them is expensive. Every failure is painful, and the institutional pressure to keep them safe pushes against the kind of iterative, messy, fail-often data collection that machine learning needs.
So you get small datasets by default.
Tiny datasets. And here's the vicious cycle, imitation learning. Teaching a robot to mimic human behavior by showing it examples needs lots of examples to work. The more varied your tasks, the more examples you need. So expensive robots give you small data sets. Small data sets give you bad imitation learning. Bad imitation learning tells everyone reinforcement learning is the answer. Reinforcement learning is slow and difficult to set up, and the field spends years going in circles.
Aloha breaks that cycle.
Aloha breaks the cycle. Tony Zhao is the lead author, working with Vikash Kumar, Sergey Levine, and Chelsea Finn at Stanford. And their thesis is almost embarrassingly simple. If you can make the hardware cheap enough, not cheap as in compromised, but cheap as in affordable on an academic budget, you can run lots of robots, collect lots of data, and suddenly imitation learning works. Cost isn't a constraint you work around. Cost is the variable you optimize.
What does cheap mean in practice here?
Cheap means two Viper X300 robot arms. These are 6 degree of freedom arms from Trossen Robotics off the shelf. Consumer grade. About $10,000 each, so $20,000 total for the pair. For comparison, a single industrial arm with comparable reach might cost 3 to 5 times that. The Aloha rig includes a small leader version of each arm that the human operator physically backdrives. They grab the leader arm and move it through the task, and the follower arm mirrors the motion exactly. That's the teleoperation interface. No VR headset, no haptic feedback device, no motion capture suit. Just a person grabbing a small arm and moving it like a puppet.
The leader-follower puppeteering setup.
Which is also not new. But what's new is doing it at this price point with arms that are good enough to actually demonstrate fine manipulation, because the tasks Zhao and his team are testing are not trivial. Threading a cable tie, slotting a battery into a slot, stacking cups, uncapping a marker, and the one that became the paper's calling card, transferring a small cube from one chopstick to another.
Which is genuinely difficult. Chopsticks require coordinated grip force across 2 contact points on each side.
2 arms, 4 contact points, all moving together, and the objects are small and the tolerances are tight. This is not pick and place. This is the kind of task that roboticists previously treated as requiring years of specialized engineering, force sensing, and careful calibration of an expensive platform.
So, what's the learning algorithm?
This is the second half of the Aloha paper, and it introduces something genuinely clever. Zhao calls it action chunking with transformers, or AETT. And the key insight is about a problem called compounding error. When a robot is executing a task via imitation learning, it typically makes one decision at a time. Observe the current state, pick the next action, execute it, observe the new state, pick the next action, but each step is imperfect. The robot's predicted action differs slightly from what an expert would do. And these small errors compound. By step 20, the robot is in a slightly different state than any state it was trained on. By step 50, it's off the distribution entirely. And off the distribution, the policy fails.
The death by 1,000 small mistakes.
Exactly. And there's a second problem, which is that human demonstrations are multimodal. When you show a human teleoperator a task and ask them to do it 50 times, they'll do it slightly differently each time. Sometimes they'll grab the object from the left, sometimes from the right, sometimes they'll pause mid-task. The policy needs to account for this variability, or it'll average the modes and produce a confused, hesitant, jerky behavior that doesn't match any of the demonstrations.
Classic mode collapse in behavioral cloning.
ACT addresses both problems with one design choice. Instead of predicting the next single action, the policy predicts a chunk of 90 actions at once, a full second of motor commands predicted in one transformer forward pass.
And if you predict 90 steps at once, you can plan a coherent trajectory rather than reacting moment by moment.
You get temporal coherence. The predicted chunk is internally consistent. You don't get the jitter that comes from step-by-step prediction, and because you're executing the chunk open loop before re-querying the policy, you spend less time in the distribution shift regime. The robot gets a chance to actually complete a sub-move before being corrected by the policy.
What's the model architecture? Transformers for what exactly?
The policy is a conditional variational autoencoder, a CVAEE, built on top of a transformer. The CVAE has an encoder that takes in the current sequence of actions from a demonstration and produces a latent variable Z. Essentially, a compact representation of the style of behavior being demonstrated. During training, Z captures the multimodal variability. During inference, Z is sampled from a prior distribution. The transformer decoder then takes Z along with visual observations from multiple cameras and proprioceptive state, joint positions and velocities, and predicts the chunk of 90 future actions.
How many cameras?
3 in the original Aloha setup, an overhead camera looking down at the workspace, and a wrist camera on each arm. The wrist cameras are important because they give the policy close-up views of the grasping zone, which is where the precision actually happens. You can't reliably insert a battery by looking at it from 3 feet away. You need to see the slot from centimeters.
And the observations go through a ResNet before hitting the transformer?
Exactly. Each image is processed by a ResNet encoder that produces a feature map which gets flattened into a sequence of tokens. The transformer then attends over those image tokens together with the proprioceptive state and the latent Z. The output is the sequence of 90 future actions, 14-dimensional at each team step because you have 6 joints per arm plus the gripper state on each side.
So the latent Z is absorbing the multimodality.
Z is the variable that represents which way is this demonstration going to do it. High Zid, grab from the left, low Zid, grab from the right. The model isn't forced to average. It learns to condition on the mode, and during inference sampling, Z randomly naturally produces varied behavior that covers the distribution of human demonstrations.
There's also a temporal ensembling trick in the paper, isn't there?
There is. Because the policy is running continuously, re-querying every few steps, you get overlapping predictions. At each team step, you have multiple action chunk predictions that all cover the current moment in time. Temporal ensembling weights those predictions by how recently they were generated and takes a weighted average. It's a form of smoothing. You get less jitter because you're blending multiple near-future predictions rather than committing to any single one.
Results.
50 demonstrations per task. 80 to 90% success on 6 real-world tasks. These are not easy tasks. The battery insertion requires sub-centimeter precision. The chopstick transfer requires millimeter coordination across 4 simultaneous contacts, and all of this on $20,000 hardware that Zhao's lab built in a Stanford garage. Chapter 2. Aloha Grows Legs. January 2024. Zipeng Fu and Tony Zhao, still at Stanford, still Chelsea Finn's lab. The paper is Mobile Aloha, and the question they're asking is, okay, stationary bimanual manipulation is impressive, but most of the tasks that would make robots genuinely useful in the real world require mobility. You don't cook shrimp at a fixed station. You navigate to the pan, you turn on the stove, you move between surfaces.
And a robot bolted to a table can't do any of that.
So they mount the Aloha system on a wheeled mobile base. The user is physically tethered to the system and uses their body to push the base around, while their hands control the arms. The base records linear and angular velocity. The arms record joint positions. Everything fuses into a 16-dimensional action vector, 14 for the 2 6 DOF arms, plus gripper positions, 2 for the mobile base, and critically, they use exactly the same learning approach, behavioral cloning imitation learning, 50 demonstrations.
Does it work?
It works embarrassingly well. Mobile Aloha cooks and serves a piece of shrimp, opens a 2-door wall cabinet and stores heavy cooking pots, calls an elevator and enters it, rinses a pan at the sink. The videos went viral in January 2024 in a way that robotics papers almost never do. People saw a robot cooking in what looked like a real kitchen, and it connected with something.
But the interesting result isn't the shrimp, is it?
The interesting result is co-training. Here's the problem Zipeng Fu identified. They have 50 demonstrations for each mobile task, but 50 demonstrations of mobile manipulation is almost no data. The base adds degrees of freedom, and the tasks are long horizon and varied. Training only on mobile data gives mediocre performance. But then they try something that sounds strange. They take the static Aloha datasets from the original paper. 825 episodes of stationary tasks, tasks that have nothing to do with the mobile tasks. And they co-train on both datasets together.
Static data from a fixed robot, improving a mobile robot.
Not just improving. Success rates go up by up to 90% on some mobile tasks. Average of 34% absolute improvement across all tasks. The network was pre-trained to understand manipulation at a general level. Grasping, placing, coordinating two arms. And that general competence transferred to the mobile context, even though the base is completely new.
Why does that work?
Because the arms are the same. The static tasks teach the model how to coordinate two Viper X arms in manipulation. That knowledge transfers even when there are also base velocity commands in the action space. The model doesn't need to learn grasping again. It already knows grasping. It just needs to learn when to also move the base. And you only need 50 demonstrations of that.
That's the co-training insight. Data from one platform helps another platform.
And it will echo through everything that comes next. Because once you understand that data transfers across context, that manipulation knowledge is somewhat universal. The question becomes not how do I get enough data for this specific task, but how do I build a platform where data is cheap and abundant and general? Chapter 3. The Stanford Garage becomes a Google workhorse. By the time Aloha Unleashed comes out in October 2024, Tony Zhao has a dual appointment, Stanford and Google DeepMind. Chelsea Finn is still on the paper, and something has shifted in the scale of the operation. The original Aloha was one rig in a lab. Aloha 2 is a fleet.
What changed between Aloha and Aloha 2?
The hardware was redesigned for continuous large-scale data collection. The grippers are smoother, with lower friction rail designs that improve ergonomics for operators who are running hours of teleoperation per day, not minutes. The gravity compensation is passive and mechanical, rather than held together with rubber bands. Important when you have 35 operators using 10 different robots in two different buildings over 8 months. New cameras, Intel RealSense D405 units with global shutter, depth capability, and larger field of view than the consumer webcams in the original. The frame was simplified to give more workspace. A full MuJoCo simulation model was open-sourced, and the whole thing. Hardware designs, CAD files, software went open-source and became commercially available through Trossen Robotics.
So, any lab in the world can buy an Aloha too?
Any lab with a research budget, which is the point. The original Aloha democratized bimanual manipulation at $20,000. Aloha 2 is the version you build a data collection infrastructure around, the version you run with a pool of non-expert operators, the version you deploy as a fleet.
You said non-expert operators? That's important.
Very important. One of the things Aloha 2's design targets is what Zhao calls the protocol-driven collection model. Instead of researchers hand-collecting demonstrations, you write detailed protocol documents like work instructions in a factory. And you hire operators who follow the protocol. You don't need a PhD to collect Aloha 2 data. You need to be able to follow a task procedure. This is how they get to over 26,000 demonstrations for 5 tasks in Aloha Unleashed, which we'll get to in a moment. It's the difference between data collection as a research activity and data collection as a production process. Chapter 4. Aloha Unleashed. What happens when you really push imitation learning? October 2024. Tony Zhao, Jonathan Thompson, Danny Dries, Pete Florence, Kamiar Gassamipour, Chelsea Finn, Azan Wahid, all Google DeepMind. The paper is Aloha Unleashed, a simple recipe for robot dexterity. And the question is, how far can you push imitation learning with enough data and a good enough model?
And the answer is, further than anyone thought.
Further than anyone thought, but with a critical change to the learning architecture. The original ACT used a CVAE to handle multimodality. Aloha Unleashed replaces that with a diffusion loss.
Walk me through why that matters.
A CVAE is elegant, but it has a specific failure mode with very multimodal data. The latent variable Z has to compress all the behavioral variation into a compact distribution. And when the data is sufficiently varied, because you have 35 operators each doing the task slightly differently across 8 months. The CVAE can struggle. The latent space becomes hard to sample from. Effectively, you get mode dropping or blurry behavior.
Diffusion models handle multimodality differently.
Completely differently. A diffusion policy learns to denoise actions during training. You take a clean action chunk and progressively add noise until it becomes pure Gaussian noise. You train the model to predict and remove that noise step by step. During inference, you start from random Gaussian noise and denoise it, running the model 50 times until you've recovered a clean action chunk. The multimodality is captured implicitly. Different random samples from the Gaussian prior produce different behaviors, all drawn from the learned distribution of demonstrations.
50 inference steps sounds expensive.
It's 43 milliseconds on an RTX 4090, fast enough to run action chunks at 50 hertz. And crucially, the paper finds that non-diffusion architectures, including the original ACT's AE, simply cannot solve some of these tasks, despite being previously tuned for the Aloha platform. You need the expressiveness of diffusion.
Because the tasks are harder.
Because the tasks are genuinely harder. Aloha Unleashed demonstrates hanging a shirt on a hanger, which requires flattening the shirt, picking the hanger, doing a handover, inserting the hanger into the shirt collar, and hanging it back on the rack, a 7-step long horizon task with a deformable object, tying shoelaces, centering a shoe, straightening the laces, then executing the bow tying maneuver, replacing a robot finger into a slotted mechanism with millimeter tolerance, inserting 3 plastic gears with friction fit, and a random kitchen stack task with varied initialization.
These are tasks that robots couldn't do before.
To the best of the author's knowledge, Aloha Unleashed is the first end-to-end policy that can autonomously tie shoelaces. Not with a special gripper or a force-sensing finger or a surgical robot arm with Viper X arms and cameras trained by imitation.
How many demonstrations does it take?
For the shirt task, 13,000 demonstrations for shoelaces, 7,200. Across all 5 tasks, over 26,000 total, collected over 8 months on 10 robots by 35 operators. That's a fleet operation, not a PhD project.
The original Aloha needed 50 demonstrations. Aloha Unleashed needs thousands.
For proportionally harder tasks. The original battery insertion is hard. Shoelace tying is in a different category of difficulty. The required precision is higher. The deformability makes state harder to observe. The sequence of steps is longer, and each step depends on the previous ones in ways that compound. You need more data because you're buying more capability. And the data is affordable because the hardware is cheap and the operators don't need PhDs. Chapter 5. Gemini meets Aloha. March 2025. Google DeepMind publishes Gemini Robotics, bringing AI into the physical world. This is a big team paper. The Gemini Robotics team, which means dozens of people, and it represents something qualitatively different. Not another iteration on imitation learning. Something bigger.
What's the shift?
The shift is, instead of training a specialist policy for each task, you train a single large model that can perform a wide range of tasks across diverse objects and environments following natural language instructions, a vision-language action model, VLA.
Gemini is a foundation model.
Gemini 2.0 is one of the most capable language and vision models in the world. It understands images, video, text, spatial relationships, temporal sequences, causal reasoning. The Gemini Robotics paper asks, what happens if you take that understanding and fine-tune it to output robot actions? Not as a separate head, but as the core output. Text, images, and actions all become part of the same sequence the model generates.
And the platform is Aloha 2.
Aloha 2 is the primary platform because it's the most mature, most documented, most data-rich bimanual manipulation platform available. The Aloha lineage has spent 2 years building the infrastructure, the hardware, the teleoperation protocol, the data collection machine, and now you can pour a foundation model on top of it.
What can Gemini Robotics do that earlier Aloha policies couldn't?
3 things. First, generalization. A task-specific ACT policy is trained on one task. If you change the object, the lighting, the initial position, the success rate drops. Gemini Robotics generalizes across object types and positions, handles unseen environments, and follows diverse natural language instructions. Move the red mug to the left. Stack the block on top of the cup instructions. It was never explicitly trained for.
Because the language understanding comes from pre-training.
The world knowledge is already there. You don't train it to understand left. It already knows left. You just train it to connect that understanding to robot actions.
Second thing.
Zero-shot control. The Gemini Robotics ER model. The embodied reasoning variant. Can control a robot without any fine-tuning on robot action data. It generates robot code. You describe the task in language. It writes the motor commands as Python code. The code executes on the robot. No demonstrations. Not 50. Not 10. Zero. The robot does the task because the foundation model already understood the world well enough.
That's the trajectory from 50 demonstrations to zero.
The trajectory that took 2 years. Original Aloha, 50 demonstrations, one specific task. Mobile Aloha, 50 demonstrations with co-training. Aloha unleashed, thousands of demonstrations, harder tasks. Gemini Robotics, 10 demonstrations for fast adaptation, and for some tasks, zero demonstrations, just language.
Third thing.
Extreme dexterity at scale. Through the specialization fine-tuning, Gemini Robotics can be pushed to tasks like folding an origami fox, a task requiring precise sequential folds of deformable paper, or playing a game of cards, tasks that earlier Aloha policies required massive data collection to achieve. Gemini Robotics can reach with dramatically fewer demonstrations because the foundation model provides such a strong prior.
The priors replace data.
That's the equation. Data was the bottleneck because algorithms were weak. Now the algorithms are strong. The foundation model knows about the physical world, knows about objects and hands and manipulation, not from robot demonstrations, but from the internet. Every video of a human folding origami, every description of card games, every photograph of hands, that's embodied knowledge that transfers to the robot. And suddenly the marginal value of each demonstration is much higher.
I want to push on the zero-shot claim. Zero demonstrations means no policy training at all. It can't actually be executing arbitrary manipulation tasks without any examples.
You're right to push on that. Zero shot via code generation works for tasks that are decomposable into primitive skills the model already knows. Gemini Robotics ER looks at the scene, reasons about the task, and writes code like move end effector to position XYZ, close gripper, move to position X2Y2Z2, open gripper. It works when the task structure is simple enough that the spatial reasoning capability of the foundation model is sufficient to generate correct motor commands without learning from examples.
So it's not learning new physical skills. It's expressing existing physical skill in a new context.
Exactly. You can think of zero-shot control as the foundation model's spatial reasoning being good enough to solve easy tasks, and the few-shot and full fine-tuning paths being how you get to harder tasks. 10 demonstrations lets you fold clothes. A task with a deformable object and substantial state variation. 100 demonstrations gets you to tasks requiring finger-level precision. Thousands gets you to shoelace tying territory. The foundation model pushes the zero demo capability up. The data collection infrastructure handles the rest.
It's a ladder. Each rung is a different data regime.
And Aloha is how you climb the ladder efficiently, because you can collect 100 demonstrations in an afternoon on Aloha hardware that costs the same as a used car. Chapter 6. Gemini Robotics 1.5 and the Embodiment Problem. October 2025. Gemini Robotics 1.5. And this paper is asking a question that the field has been wrestling with since the beginning. Can you train a single model that controls different kinds of robots?
The embodiment problem. Each robot has different joints, different kinematics, different action spaces.
A policy trained to control two Viper X300 arms can't directly control a different arm configuration without retraining. The action space is specific to the hardware. Joint angles for Aloha 2 are in different ranges with different dynamics than joint angles for any other robot. So every time you get new hardware, you're starting from scratch.
Unless you can transfer.
Gemini Robotics 1.5 introduces motion transfer. The key insight is that high-level motion can be described in a coordinate frame that's agnostic to the specific robot's kinematics. You represent the intended end effector trajectory, where the hand should go, how it should move. In a shared space, and then each robot's controller translates that into its own joint commands. The VLA doesn't need to know about joint angles. It needs to know about task space motion.
So you can transfer a skill from Aloha 2 to a different robot.
To any robot that can execute end effector trajectories in the same workspace, the paper demonstrates transfer across embodiments that the model was never trained on. One model, multiple robots, and this is the direction the field is going. Not one model per task, not one model per robot, but one foundation model for physical manipulation specialized to each hardware platform.
What does the motion representation actually look like? How do you describe a task without committing to specific joint angles?
Think about the difference between describing a task to a human as rotate your left elbow joint by 40 degrees versus pick up the cup from the left side. The first is embodiment specific, the second is task specific. Gemini Robotics 1.5 operates in the task specific language, end effector position and orientation in Cartesian space, gripper aperture, task relevant contact points. The intelligence lives at that level of abstraction, and each robot's controller translates it down into joint commands appropriate for its own kinematics. A Viper X arm and an ABB arm and a theoretical third platform can all receive the same task space trajectory, and each execute it within their own mechanical constraints.
And the VLA model outputs at that level of abstraction.
The VLA operates in task space, which has a secondary benefit. The actions are more interpretable. You can read a Cartesian trajectory and understand what the robot is supposed to be doing. You cannot easily interpret 14 joint angles.
That changes the economics of robot deployment.
Dramatically. Right now, training a robot for a new task is expensive, even with Aloha, because you need hardware-specific demonstrations. If motion transfer works reliably, you train once on a demonstration platform and deploy across a fleet of different hardware. The separation between the intelligence and the hardware becomes real. Chapter 7, The Actual Story. Let me tell you what I think this lineage is really about, because I don't think it's primarily a story about algorithms. It's a story about what happens when you take cost seriously as a research variable.
Aloha's real innovation was the price tag.
Before Aloha, the implicit assumption in high-end robot learning was that you needed expensive hardware to do interesting manipulation, and expensive hardware created a constraint on data. and the constraint on data was a constraint on what learning algorithms could achieve. So people worked on better algorithms, more sample-efficient reinforcement learning, better transfer learning, clever simulation setups, all trying to make more of a dataset that was small because the hardware to collect it was expensive.
The wrong optimization target.
Completely wrong. And Tony Zhao's insight was, don't make the algorithms better for small datasets, make the datasets bigger by making the hardware cheaper. If you have $20,000 hardware, you can have 10 rigs instead of one. If you have 10 rigs, you can have 35 operators instead of three. If you have 35 operators, you can collect 26,000 demonstrations instead of 200.
And 26,000 demonstrations is enough for shoelace tying.
Which turns out not to be an algorithm problem at all. It's a data problem. The diffusion policy that solves shoelace tying is not a dramatic architectural innovation over what existed in 2022. It's a solid engineering choice combined with enough data to make it work.
How does this connect to the foundation model story?
The progression from Aloha to Gemini Robotics is the story of closing the gap between data you have and data you need. Aloha says, make hardware cheap so data is abundant. Co-training says, transfer data across tasks to get more out of each dataset. Foundation models say, use internet knowledge to reduce the data you need from robot demonstrations in the first place. All three are different answers to the same question, and they reinforce each other. The cheap hardware generates data. The data trains foundation models. The foundation models make the cheap hardware dramatically more capable. The loop closes.
There's a parallel to what happened with language models. For years, people were building specialized NLP systems for each task. Then someone said, "What if you just trained one enormous model on all the text?" And suddenly, you didn't need task-specific data nearly as much.
The parallel is almost exact, and the timing tracks. The LLM revolution was enabled by two things: the transformer architecture in 2017 and scaling compute and data. The robot learning revolution is being enabled by two things: cheap, capable hardware for data collection and VLAs that can absorb that data into a general policy. The hardware equivalent of the transformer was Alohe A. The data scaling equivalent is the Alohe A2 fleet and the protocol-driven collection. The GPT-4 equivalent is Gemini Robotics.
And we're at what point in that timeline?
If the language model analogy holds, somewhere between GPT-3 and GPT-4 in capability terms, genuinely impressive in structured settings. Not yet the thing that does arbitrary physical tasks autonomously in novel environments. But the trajectory is pointing somewhere specific, and the investments being made are proportional to the expected returns.
And the capability frontier keeps moving.
50 demonstrations for battery insertion in 2023. Zero demonstrations for some tasks in 2025. The speed of that progression is astonishing, and it happened because a PhD student in a garage decided that the arms should cost $10,000 instead of $100,000, and that this constraint was a feature and not a bug.
What's the limit?
I don't know. I think we're still in the steep part of the curve. The Aloha platform is going to keep getting more capable as foundation models improve. And foundation models are going to keep improving, partly because of the data that Aloha-style platforms generate. The OpenX embodiment dataset, which is the canonical cross-lab robot demonstration dataset, has Aloha data in it. That data is training the next generation of VLAs that will then run on Aloha hardware. The ecosystem is self-reinforcing.
Two questions. First, is any of this applicable outside the lab?
Careful answer here. The tasks in these papers, cooking shrimp, hanging shirts, tying shoelaces, are demonstrations. They're performed in controlled-ish environments with known objects, known starting positions, within a tested range of variation. None of this is robot autonomously cooks you a meal from a full fridge without any setup. The generalization is impressive, but bounded. We're not at household robot yet.
How far are we?
My read is that we're in the same place language models were around 2021. Impressive capabilities on defined benchmarks and structured tasks. Not yet the fully general thing people imagine, but the slope is steep, and there's no obvious ceiling visible from here.
Second question. The arms are for hands. What about legs?
That's for another episode. Today was about bimanual manipulation. Arms, grippers, tables, objects. The insight is about what you do with hands when you teach a machine to have them. And I think that insight, that making data cheap is more important than making algorithms clever, is one of those things that's going to look obvious in retrospect and wasn't obvious at all when someone first said it.
Except he didn't just say it. He built the arms.
He built the arms, bolted them to a table in a garage, charged $20,000 for the privilege of learning from them, and then went and showed that a robot could pick up a battery with chopsticks. From the labs. This has been DTF, FTL.
This podcast is entirely AI generated. Scripts written by Claude Opus 4.6. Voices rendered by Tianwen 3TTS, that's Quen 3TTS for us English speakers. Find Daily Tech Feed from the labs on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever fine podcasts are distributed. All of our shows here at Daily Tech Feed are available at pod.c457.org. Not affiliated with any companies or researchers discussed. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you tomorrow. Wild schemes, new worlds in a PDF beam. Daily tech feed from the labs. Tiny sparks turning into maps. Archive pages in a gentle sway. Tomorrow's tricks in my ears today.